come mix.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, cheers, Paddy. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need to stick to the ritual of putting in a cue in the speaking cue. He makes some very, very interesting observations there, Paddy. And substantially agree with, but I mean, when you're talking about workers, you're primarily talking about clerical type or administrative type workers. Most manual workers, of course, can't work from home if they're in a production process. So you're talking about a few people there. As I say, mainly clerical, administrative, managerial type, perhaps designers, etc. But generally not manual type. And I think some of you know that I was a former HR manager, and I certainly dealt with quite frequently with individuals asking to work from home. And generally speaking, because they come through HR, I would tend to agree with it. But the point that you're making, Paddy, with some managers, they were quite vociferous. You know, why are you supporting that? Why are you supporting that? Because it was a perfectly reasonable request. But we don't know what they're doing. The fact of the matter is, they can know what it is they're doing at home, because they can link up to the computers, etc., that they have at home, and to a large extent, pretty much know what it is they're doing and what the deadlines are. That there are certainly benefits to some workers working from home, in terms of if they've saved, for discussion's sake, an hour's drive in the morning to get to work and an hour's drive coming back at night, that goes out the window straight away. You know, so they don't need to maybe get up at 8 o'clock in the morning to be there for 9 or whatever it might be. So there is huge advantages there. But I do know that at times, and I'm only talking about my own experience here, not on statistics, etc., or what's been happening perhaps in other organisations I've not worked for, is that there are occasions where workers also like to have, you know, maybe a day or two in the office to be with their colleagues. And as you say, it might well be just have a chat over the fountain, the water fountain, or share a cup of coffee with them. But in terms of the I know that certainly where I was, risk assessments had to be undertaken before individuals were allowed to work at home, in terms of the suitability of the workplace that they were using for insurance purposes, and particularly those related to that were using the computers, you know, the amount of time they spend on the screens, etc., the placing of the computer. These things had to be checked out beforehand. So yeah, whilst there was many advantages for workers working at home, there was also, as I say, the feeling at times that, you know, coming into the office for a day or two to meet with their work colleagues, they found that beneficial also. But yeah, you make interesting observations there, Paddy. Thanks.
Oh, thanks, Freddie. I mean, I just before I go on to Janet, I mean, just to respond to that a little bit. I mean, yeah, I was kind of careful not to imply that, you know, home working was a universal thing, because clearly, as you say, there, you know, lots and lots of people who are manual workers amongst them, you know, for him, that's not an option. But And also, I wasn't trying to say that, you know, a life of complete isolation in your own bedroom would be necessarily a good thing for people. So I think that some socialisation, well, like with us, you know, I mean, we can have online meetings, but if we don't have any kind of physical ever, you know, meet up physically, it's all a bit, it all becomes a bit sterile. So there's that side of it as well. But I was just thinking that, I mean, what I suppose the point I was getting at was that, you know, if you looked at the economy of, say, you know, the UK in, I think it was 1960, I seem to remember this, I'm a bit vague now, but manufacturing and agriculture was something like 80% of the GDP. And services was about 20%. I've just checked just now on the Commons Library Parliament UK figures for April to June 2021. The service industries accounted for 80% of total UK economic output and 82% of employment. So really, I was thinking of more the service industries, and the scope for working from home in the service industries is pretty huge, in fact. So it isn't just a small thing. I mean, this is why there is such a sort of, I think, cold war between the government and the civil service at the moment. So there we go. Janet's next in the queue. Janet?
Yeah, thank you. I think this should be called the Friday Night Rants from my on, and rather than just the Friday Night chat, because it's quite a good place to have a go at capitalism, isn't it? Mine is about forms and telephones, because I want to keep on using the telephone and speak to people. But everywhere you're being channeled into having to go online to do anything you need to do. And that's not so easy for me as you youngsters. But the other thing is the form filling in. There is batches of forms for whatever you may need, any help with anything. You've got to fill in half a dozen forms or get someone else to do it for you, because they want you to do it online. And that's not so easy either. But the other thing, I noticed that programme, Yes Minister, I think it's wonderful. Really, really Mickey taking, and it was written by a couple of political people, wasn't it, who actually know what they were dealing with and what they were talking about. So I really like that. The other thing is ritual. I quite like queuing in the speaking queue, because it makes me feel comfortable. I know where I am. I'm not pushing in on anyone else. I'm not interrupting anyone else by mistake or anything like that. So I think it's quite a useful way for us to be in these meetings. And the other thing I wanted to say, I think, ritual. I watched that opening of Parliament, and it is horrendous, horrendous in its ritual. The crown has to be carried on a cushion in front of whoever is the reigning monarch or whoever's speaking for her this year. And the stick thing and the other thing that has to be carried in the hand. All these disgusting, disgusting rituals that they go in for. And the knocking to let black rod in, that's another. Well, maybe that's a good thing, because that actually harks back to the time when Parliament took over and made it constitutional rather than the monarch being ruled through, God ruling through the monarch. So I think perhaps that might be a sign of some sort of common touch. But as far as working from home is concerned, I think it is interesting, because so many jobs could be done from home and may well be better for being done from home. Certainly you haven't got to travel in. But then if you consider all the workings of capitalism and all the contradictions within capitalism, people get their living from other people travelling into work and buying cups of coffee on the way and things like that. So it's all an awfully... like a spider's web of needs and selling and buying and interacting. And the other thing is, I think that some people are quite do quite enjoy getting together and meeting together over their work situation, and maybe they do by talking and meeting, and they will learn from each other as well. And there must be a certain amount of pleasure in that. And I suppose what would be sensible would be a few days at home and a couple of days in the office, or one day in the office and the rest at home. That might be quite good. I think that there are various ways that we could operate a socialist society that which would be sensible and pleasant without being onerous, and certainly without being travelling on trains that are like cattle, have gone back to being like cattle trucks again, apparently, after a period of lockdown when you actually could travel with a certain amount of freedom because there wasn't so many people going into work. This is on the underground trains and overline trains in and out of London, of course, and I guess it must be much the same in all the other cities in this country. So I think that there must be wonderful ways of organising ourselves which would be beneficial, but and to get the best out of everyone, and in any case many of us wouldn't have to go in because we wouldn't be doing worthwhile jobs, which within capitalism there are so many unworthwhile jobs, aren't there? I'll stop now.
Thanks, Jeanette. Well, I'm glad you like the use the ritual of the speaking queue. It's quite a useful ritual, I reckon. So Mike's in the next one to take up the ritual.
Hello there. Thanks. Interesting talk, Paddy, and interesting discussion so far. And I can relate to it. I've not long changed jobs where I'm more back in the office, and it's more office based, which is quite a contrast to the sort of rough and ready sort of frontline work I was doing before, which I prefer, if I'm honest. And every time I work in an office, I say to myself, I'll never do it again, because I find the sort of the layout, the architecture, very alienating, very sort of sterile and repressive. I mean, even if the people I work with are okay, and they are, you know, it's just the let's say the sort of the atmosphere of offices, as much as the ritual which gets to me. And I always feel a bit edgy, you know, using the security pass to open the door and things like that. And my sort of little act of rebellion, and hope I can trust everyone here not to grasp me up on this, is sneaking in early into the office in the morning and using the benefit of the colour printers to print off stuff for summer school or EC meetings. So that's my little act of rebellion there. But with myself, I find that whole environment alienating and rather cold, as much as the ritual. I'm sure there are sort of similar psychological reasons for that. But I suppose the discussion sort of prompted sort of a question, in that if there are more people working from home, and I quite like it myself, I can do it a couple of days a week. But what implications does that have for sort of collective worker action? It's a bit more atomized, of course, you know, you can communicate with the union or whoever through Zoom, but I don't know. I'm not sure how much it would galvanise sort of collective action, because it's a more, individualistic way of working. I don't know if that sort of got wider implications. So yeah, I don't know if anyone else has got any thoughts on that. Yeah, cheers. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I mean, it's a good question that you asked there. I mean, what are the implications for collective action? I think if you look at how people working from home are still nevertheless working together as if they were in the office. They just happen to not be in the office. So if there was a dispute, I mean, the first thing they do is, well, the same thing we would do is like call a meeting. Let's get all in a physical meeting, make it a physical meeting probably. But they would probably do that. Where people can't do that because the nature of the work, like in the sort of gig economy type jobs, where they can't do that, like, you know, Uber and Just Eat and these kind of things. I mean, what they've done is they've appealed to, they've gone to court over it and won some concessions that way. So, I mean, workers do have ways to fight, even if they're sort of, you know, sort of, there is no physical workplace. You know, they've still, you know, the Uber workers still got together and, you know, and took action. I mean, the fact that it was legal action, okay, I can see that the argument that, well, you know, that's still within the terms of capitalist law, but it's still a way to fight back, and they were quite successful. So I think, I mean, you know, generally I think that what's happened, like, I think, in fact, the risk of repeating myself, you know, the pandemic has, capitalism has kind of slipped to gear during the pandemic, and it's let slip a freedom that, you know, for workers, that now it desperately wants to claw back. And I think workers know that the bosses want to claw this back, and they're going to fight them, I think, and they should fight them, because it is a freedom that workers didn't have before, and you know, they should fight tooth and nail to not let this get taken away. Just something else that I suddenly, that occurred to me when we were talking about ritual before. I don't know why I called this thing superstition, because it's really not to do with that, is it? It's more to do with ritual. But I seem to remember Americans, I can't remember who it was, but someone pointed out that, you know, in Britain, we sort of live in thrall to ritual, and that, you know, oppression is kind of built into the living landscape of Britain, as witness the castles on all the hills. You know, in most towns and cities have got a castle on a hill, you know, to constantly remind us, you know, that we were the peasants and, you know, the barons or the kings were the bosses. That's something I forgot about before, just to underline the sense of, you know, these kind of ancient horrible rituals that Janet was talking about, the ridiculous circus of the opening of Parliament, and nowadays they televise all this stuff so that we can all sit glued and watch it all, and, you know, well, I don't know if any of us did, but people, they obviously think that this is all fascinating enough for people to want to watch.
Just say something. Can you hear me?
Please do, yeah.
So I've been working at home ever since the pandemic started. So it's been over 2 years now. And we've recently gone to hybrid working, where we're required to come into the office one day a month. So that's pretty good. And I think it's because our managers are all really enjoying the whole working from home thing themselves, because by and large, they're middle class or whatever, you know, they're on really good salaries, but they live a long, long way from the office. So they're out in the leafy suburbs or even in a different county. So they've really enjoyed the benefits, and they're quite happy for this working from home thing to continue. My own experience of it is my productivity has sharply declined, and it's because, don't tell Jacob Rees-Mogg this, but it's because I think when I was in the office, it used to be so boring not working that I would just go on and do my work, whereas at home there's a lot of other more interesting things to do. You know, like do a bit of gardening, or I don't know, feed the birds, or a bit of flower arranging even, or watering all my plants. And, you know, so there's always some kind of distraction, which is a lot more interesting than actually sitting down at the laptop and doing any work. But anyway, I've got away with it so far. You know, nobody's complained, so hooray. It's a benefit that I for one certainly want to continue. In terms of union activity, I've actually found that union activity has dramatically increased as a result of lockdown. So when we were office-based, we had very few, you know, local meetings, and the ones that we did have would be attended by maybe 10 or 20 people at most. But now we have regular fortnightly meetings that attract over 100 members, you know, on Microsoft Teams. And I think it's because people think, well, it's a nice break from working, so let's go to the union meeting. So I think actual, I mean, I'm not saying we go out and strike every week or anything. I mean, it's not actually resulted in any kind of sort of like actual action or activity. But it does give us a chat. But we're certainly more collective in terms of getting together and talking about issues and complaining about things. So I would say our union branch has been massively strengthened as a result of the lockdown. But that may be atypical. I'm not saying that would be the same. And I have to say it's down to the blooming SWP organiser, of course. But yeah, so to wake up this morning and find out that they're going on the attack now, they're going on the offensive against the civil servants, which I am one, you just think, oh, bloody hell. How, you know, how more evil can they get? And how does this possibly help the whole crisis over, you know, our standard of living and how it's been dramatically eroded by sacking a fifth of the workforce so that we all then go on to benefits and we stop paying taxes and all the sort of public services that people depend on just get worse, so that instead of waiting 10 weeks for a passport, are we going to have to wait 20 weeks now, and so on and so forth. So that's my experience of home working. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. That's some interesting points you raised there. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what anybody else thinks, but my tendency with this government is to think that regardless of the real causes of problems, supply chain issues, you know, Brexit, the war, you know, the Tories, their sort of default position is to find some way to blame workers. So, you know, this whole lazy gits kind of argument, I mean, it plays well with Tory voters. My old mum was complaining that her pills were late. They came late, and she said, oh, this is all because of all the people working from home. So I had to patiently explain that it probably wasn't to do with that. It was probably because most of the medicine, a lot of the medicines in this country come from Europe, and they're all held up at the docks with the long tailbacks on account of the Brexit that she actually voted for. So, but yeah, the government likes to blame workers. And but interestingly, about this 91,000 civil servants that they say they're going to... they say they're not going to lay them off. They're just not going to replace them, was the argument. But what they didn't mention was that half of these people they'd hired in the first place to deal with the paperwork to do with Brexit. And I thought, well, they didn't actually, Boris and his cronies like Mogg didn't advertise the fact that the administration costs for Brexit would mean having to hire 40 or 50,000 extra civil service staff. They didn't actually mention that aspect of it, which I thought was quite amusing. I thought it was interesting what you said, Paul, about union activity increasing. That's an encouraging sign. Well, maybe it's because, yeah, civil servants are feeling a bit bolshy at the moment, feeling a bit poorly treated. That wouldn't surprise me. But the fact that these things are online, and I, from what I understood you to say, they seem to be in office hours. So, yeah, why the hell not turn up? If you don't actually have to leave the desk, you can just do it online. Then, anything that makes it easier to go to union meetings probably does help, SWP convener notwithstanding. It occurred to me that, I mean, there's a strong ecological argument for this, you know, not, you know, why burn up fossil fuel on the motorway if you can work from home? So I think this plays well for the sort of environmentalist argument. But it's worth bearing in mind that if workers are paying less out in travel expenses, this is going to have a downward pressure on wages at some point. You know, employers are going to realise that they don't need to keep raising wages because workers are actually better off because they don't have to travel. So there's that aspect. I'm glad to hear that your productivity has declined when working from home, Paula, or rather I'm glad to hear that they haven't found out about it, so fingers crossed nobody notices. Somebody want to speak? Okay. That was it. Oh, is that Moggy? Are you trying to speak? Are you trying to say something?
No, I've just come in. No. I didn't know you had a meeting, you see.
Okay.
So I've only just put the computer on. So I'm sorry I missed what's happened over the past hour.
Well, we've just been talking about the fact that workers have got used to working from home during lockdown, and now I'm not sure what it's like in New Zealand, but over here the government is trying to claw this back and stop people working from home by calling them lazy gits, basically lazy bastards. And so we were just discussing, this is what we've been talking about. I'm putting the view that this is a new freedom for a lot of workers, not all workers, but a lot of workers, that has accidentally been let slip, and now the powers that be want to claw it back, and workers are fighting to keep it. Anyway, so that's roughly where we were in this discussion.
I think the attitude over here has been that it takes less traffic off the road in the rush hour. It takes more traffic off the road in the rush hour. And also, if people are working from home, then employers don't have to pay for heating the building that they work in and you know, other things like that. So I think the attitude is that they still enjoy the fact that people want to work from home.
There is that argument as well. I mentioned that earlier. You know, some bosses do take that view, but my starting point was that you know, a lot of bosses are really kind of stuck in a mindset where they need to see workers in the office in front of them, because otherwise they're all a load of skiving bastards. This is the sort of, I've worked with bosses who are like that. That's what they think. And whereas I pointed out that I used to skive all the time in the office, but you know, if I was working from home to a deadline, well, you can't get out of that. You've got to do the job. I mean, I don't know how Paula manages. Perhaps Paula, you don't have deadlines, but you know, I certainly did, and so I had to do the work. So I couldn't really wriggle out of it at home. But if I was in the office and I didn't have a deadline, well. I mean, I used to spend all day reading Wikipedia articles, and you know, no one could say anything really. So,
well, just to answer your point, Paddy, we don't have deadlines, but we have a target for number of cases that we've got to close. And when I was in the office, I worked part time, and I found that I was closing more cases than full time workers. So I was a pretty efficient worker, if you like. And then in lockdown, because I don't have to commute, I've increased my hours. So I'm now full time and my actual productivity has halved. But it's still within the sort of range of the number of cases that we're supposed to close a year. So so I think that's partly the reason why I'm getting away with it, is because I was kind of already too efficient.
Well, you need to put a stop to that, Paul.
I did, because it was really annoying me, because I was I'm putting in the work of a full-time member of staff, but I'm only getting, I'm getting 20% less wages than a full-time worker, and it really annoyed me. And I used to try and think of ways to slow myself down, but they never seemed to work, because as long as I was in the office, I just wanted to put my head down and do some work, because otherwise it was just tedious being in the office. So, but yeah, like I say, I've got more wholesome distractions now.
Well, I used to find that people in the office would make their own distractions. Have you ever? People must have heard of that thing, meeting bingo. Anybody heard of that? So basically, there's a whole bunch of things that people always say in meetings, like the phrase "going forward." If anybody's watched the comedy W1A on BBC, it's absolutely chock full of these kind of ridiculous sort of idioms and cliches that people come out with at work. And meeting bingo is you basically, you all sit down and you write down one of these things, and whenever anybody says going forward, you can tick that box and see who wins bingo. So this is what people would do in the middle of supposedly important meetings. But there's other things people would find all kinds of ways of skiving, and then always have a ready excuse if the boss wanted to know where they were up to with the job. You know, yes, it was in hand, it was ongoing. Yes, it was out to the printers, etc., etc. So, people could always find ways to do it. It's just a game, isn't it? So, if you're at home and you've got other things to do, why not do them? I mean, you can still do those, and you can still do the work when it suits you. I remember I was given an in tray. I had to have an in tray on my desk, and stuff would go in this in tray, and it would just sort of fester there. And then about once every 6 months, I would decide to go through the in tray and throw out anything that was out of date. And I could go through a packed 6 months worth of in tray in about 20 minutes. And it was great. I could virtually throw everything out. So that was obviously the way to deal with in trays, I discovered. It gave me a great sense of achievement as well. Like I'd really accomplished something that day. I think I'm probably the sort of employee that Freddie would have found an absolute nightmare from an HR point of view.
Not at all. I'm just writing there. Good night, all. I'm skiving off for a pint. So.
Well, that's fair enough. It is Friday night.
I thought the Cumbrians would agree with that. So, good night, all, then.
Night, Freddie. Well, I suppose I picked a fairly uncontroversial topic. I don't know if anybody here is actually going to sort of argue for, you know, working in an office, you know, whether they think it's better, possibly because you're socialising with people.
Well, Eddie, I had a different experience from you. The work I was doing was... helping social workers cope with their jobs, working in an office. And it was quite handy because being dyslexic, I don't have a lot of reading skills, but I used to keep busy all the time, walking around, getting exercise, but also achieving something. These council workers working with child abuse can do their job. I've never come across a job like yours, Paddy, where you just sit and do nothing. Possibly because I've not able to sit at a computer all day.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I mean, yeah, Mike, but I mean, you were doing one of those sort of jobs that I would classify as, you know, helping people in some way. I specifically excluded those kinds of job from my general comments about skiving because, you know, like if you're actually working in child protection or something like that, you don't want to be a skiver and you don't want to be working from home. I know somebody who does work in this field and she's very frustrated at the moment because a lot of the workers are still working from home and they're not going out and doing the visits like they need to be doing. So service users are not getting the sort of service that they really need. So, you know, there's a downside to this as well. But, you haven't done the kind of job I've done, but like an awful lot of people have done the kind of work I've done. It's just like, it doesn't mean anything. It's just, you know, it's just making money for some capitalist company. You know, I've worked in marketing and that sort of thing. I mean, you know, it's just a bunch of shit. If you can just skive in that, why wouldn't you, really? So anyway, that's my view. Steve, got something to say?
Yeah, just a quick comment. When I worked in an office, it was actually in some sort of in a productive capacity, really, you know, proper work, not marketing. But we used to Skype off like crazy, going playing really five-a-side football and things like that. But and a lot of time was wasted, and it just seems that the way that work under capitalism is organised, it just takes too much time up. And in a socialist society, I mean, obviously, if you leave aside the fact that once we've managed to establish a reasonable standard of living for people, that we will be just cutting back on work. That we'll be able to cut back on the amount of time that we individually need to spend at work, and we'll just be able to be more productive. As Paul was saying, she's and the capitalists aren't. I'm absolutely positive aren't unaware of this fact. That people that work part-time are doing a hell of a sight more work because they're not knackered. They come in fresher than any, probably fresher than anybody else, and they're able to do more work. And bosses have spotted this, and they're also, they've spotted that people do need to, you know, you get these stories about, I've not seen this, but you hear about stories about people in design and stuff like this, where they're able to play bloody table football or table tennis or something like that. And this is actually sanctioned. And they realised that people are... It is actually part of a productive process as well, because it's people socialising and forming bonds and all this sort of thing. So the capitalists are onto this, and they're onto the fact that obviously there's the cheaper nature of having people working from home. There's the fact that they will be able eventually to cut wages. In fact, I think I saw something a few weeks ago about some company that was trying to cut wages to the staff that were working from home. Whether that was in trying to get them to go back into work, or whether it was whether it's just a serious attempt to reduce wages and possibly thereby split the workforce between those who worked in offices and those working from home, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's just one of these weird things about work under capitalism. People don't fucking want to do it. And we will skive off. And this isn't gonna happen in a socialist society, because we won't be pressured in the same way as we are these days. Right, okay, that's probably it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that. Yeah, while you were talking there, you mentioned it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're skiving off in the office, but it's the amount of time you have to spend in the office that takes up all your day. I mean, that's a good point. I was just looking actually. I half remembered that there was a Denmark experiment to go to a four-day week, and I've just seen online it says that some of the world's most productive countries like Norway, Denmark and Germany work around 27 hours a week, so the four-day working week is closer than ever. That was from December last year, and a BBC article from middle of last year says that the four-day working week experiment in Iceland was an overwhelming success, apparently. So that's quite curious, isn't it? That, like Paula was saying, and I found this myself as well, if you work part-time, you actually do proportionally more work because you actually do the work when you're in rather than full-time when you just, half of it, you just kind of waste or find ways of wasting. Dougie's next in the queue. Dougie? Dougie is still muted.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I've not had that much work experience, maybe about 17 years, and I'm retired now. But my first job, I had 5 years with ICI. And, we took the mickey, you know, because we used to play football in a team and we used to train with Tommy Gemmell, not the Celtic guy, but the St Mirren guy, and he played for Scotland. And we would go for 2-hour lunch breaks and, you know, and Billy, who worked with me as a chemist, would always sleep in, and you know the boss would harangue him, but he never got disciplined, really. You know, and people used to sort of take things from ICI. I used to make chessmen out of rubber or whatever, with the molds and things. You know, and it was quite a good job. We didn't know we were so well off, really. You know, I mean ICI were big polluters and all the rest of it, but you know the workplace, it was quite a nice thing. You know, we used to play a lab golf, kicking a court round a lab or whatever, you know. And people used to take things. I mean, there was one guy who stole platinum gauze. He didn't know it was platinum gauze, and he put it on his chicken coop. And they went round to his house and got this platinum gauze back off him, and it was worth £40,000, and he'd just put it round his chickens or whatever. That was quite funny, yeah. What was I going to say? I've had jobs since then, and they were much worse, really. You know, I worked for Princess, you know, the fruit food manufacturer, when they had an orange juice factory. And, you know, we started off with three chemists and a secretary, and we ended up in the end with one chemist doing four people's work or whatever. You know, the HR department just decided to save money, really, you know. So, I mean, That can be a thing in capitalism. But as I said, yeah, the ICI job was the best job I had, really, yeah.
All right, thanks, Dougie. Yeah, that reminded me of, you mentioned 2-hour lunch breaks. I remember when I worked in a paper mill years ago, and we used to quite often go to the pub at lunchtime, but they had a new regime where people weren't allowed to be in the pub for 2 hours at lunchtime anymore, so they were a bit stricter about it. But they explained to me, and I don't know if this is true or they were just winding me up, that somebody had come back from a 2-hour liquid lunch break in the pub and fallen into the paper mixer, which is just like a giant Moulinex, and that they then had to sell a month's supply of pink paper. That's what they told me, so it's probably not true, but it's a good story though. Dougie again?
I mean, people used to do, you know, they did shifts at ICI, and there was a guy, but my friend's uncle or whatever, you know, he was sleeping on top of a sulfuric acid tank or whatever, you know, one of those great, great big tank things, right? And there was two tanks, and one of them blew up. And then he was playing golf with us the next day, and he couldn't hit a ball, really, you know, because he could have been on the other tank and he'd have been dead, really, you know. It was things like that happened at ICI. And there was one incident when somebody took a wire brush into the gunpowder room and tried to brush up, and then blew the legs off, really. And a lot of women just walked out after that because they saw the what happened to the guy, right, you know. So there was that kind of thing that went on, right, you know, because it was the Nobel Explosive Factory, you know, that Nobel set up in Stevenson. You know, there was accidents occasionally, yeah. So it wasn't all great things, but, I mean, I don't know, I'm rambling a bit now, yeah. Okay, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I suppose this is probably the subject of a different discussion, isn't it, about health and safety at work. I bet we've all got stories about that, but that's like probably a bit off the subject, isn't it? Janet?
Yeah, okay. I've got a problem with my computer and the screen fades, so I press the space bar to bring the screen back up, but that seems to be sending some message through that I wasn't actually doing. I wasn't actually wanting to or needing to speak. I don't mind speaking, though. I can go on a stream of consciousness for a long time, if you like, but that wouldn't be very interesting. I was thinking of all the skiving off and machinations that us workers get up to make our lives more interesting or to get a bit on the side. I knew of dockers in the olden days in the Port of London, where, I mean, I think an awful lot of the home, the stuff was, you know, the shopping was done from the docks and smuggled out under overcoats because that's what you did. And then there's this talk about the printers in the big newspaper printing industries, who they seem to have Mickey Mouse names, because there was some that there was nobody worked there. I suspect the proceeds of that job was shared out between the others all the time. And then there's other industries where telephone operators working at night have little sleeping bags behind the switchboards and have an hour or so off through the night, and they will cover each other. So that was another good way of going on. Unfortunately, I've never worked in jobs that you could get away with that sort of thing. I've always worked with jobs that there was timing or output count, so that you actually weren't able to do much on your own initiative. Except I have one job where you worked harder and you got piece rate, I think that was called, in the olden days, and you paid for what you produced. So in fact, you could raise your wages a little bit by working faster and harder. That was quite good. But my last and best job was when I worked in the public libraries, because I did feel that was a job that would be possible to be done, or needed to be done, within socialism, and would be beneficial to the society. And so I, in any case, I used to enjoy that work and work together with a group of people that were, on the whole, quite nice and interesting to be with. So although we could have done the work in fewer hours if it was organised in a different sort of way, so that would have been a sensible thing to do. Unfortunately, libraries are being undermined by technology, aren't they? Because now it's all computers and CDs and the books, the book output is dropping off because people are not reading in the way that they used to. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing overall for society, being a reader, I think it's a bad thing, but then I am biased on that. And I was wondering whether there are any rituals that people would actually like to keep, but I haven't been able to think of any yet. Thank you.
Thanks, Janet. Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, rituals that we would keep, presumably in socialism, you mean? And I've always kind of thought, I think Mike Brown's disappeared. He would have probably approved of this. I always thought the solstices were quite nice things to celebrate. I don't see why we couldn't have lots of celebrations in socialism. Just any excuse, really, for a piss-up, I imagine. But, you know, solstice would probably be quite a good one. I'm sure we'd be able to think of lots of other ones. I mean, I didn't really concentrate very much on the upside of rituals because I just said, you know, people do like rituals, but I was kind of more interested in the, you know, like I said, the dark side of rituals, the way it is used as a way of keeping us in line. But there are lots of positives about rituals. I think, you know, humans are ritualistic animals. We like to make habits. We like to do things, you know, have ways of doing things that we then follow ritualistically. So I imagine that I'm pretty sure we would do that in socialism as well. But what we wouldn't see is, I don't suppose we would see very much skiving, because, you know, why would you go and do a job for no money if you didn't want to do it? You'd presumably only go if you actually wanted to do it. I was just reminded of another thing, one job, where it was Christmas Eve, and there were no customers in the office, because who would want to? So we just shut the office, and we decided to all go to the pub. But the regional manager had told us that we had to stay at our posts, even though there were no service users in the place. And we had to stay there till 5 o'clock or else, because she was going to phone up and make sure we were there. So we just, one person volunteered. I think we were just going to buy them loads of pints later. One person volunteered to stay in the office all day, and we all just went to the pub at about 11 o'clock. And this regional manager did phone. And so the person who stayed said, oh, yeah, they're all here. Yeah, they're all working away. Yeah, they're catching up on their paperwork. Yeah. And she pretended to have conversations across the office with non-existent staff members. And the regional manager rang off deeply satisfied. So we got away with that one. And we also played, I think we played golf on the floor as well. Moved all the tables out of the way and just played crazy golf. Stuff like that. These are all very silly ways of getting our own back as workers. I'm sure we've all got stories like this. Moggy, want to say something?
Right. you're making me all very jealous because for the last 40-odd years, I just worked from home. And I think I've missed out on a lot of fun and games working in an office where people play golf and skive off and do things and pinch things. So I must have had a very dull existence working from home all those years.
Yeah, one of my great pleasures in life. Well, I don't know if it's a great pleasure, but it was a sort of little satisfaction. Was burgling reams of A4 paper out of the stationery cupboard when nobody was looking, and things like that. And that was that was years ago, before you could actually buy these things in the high street. So you could, you know, there weren't shops. Nowadays there are shops where you can just go and buy that stuff. I mean, they sell reams of A4 paper in supermarkets nowadays, but back then you couldn't get those things. So it was, you know, these stationery cupboards were little Aladdin's caves, and I got away with all sorts of things. An office chair at one time. the sense of satisfaction was out of all proportion to the thing actually purloined, even if it was only a box of marker pens. Much of this stuff, of course, I purloined in order to use for Socialist Party work, I should add. So an extra helping of satisfaction there. Well, it's
I was just going to say, can you imagine if a journalist for the Daily Mail was sitting in on this conversation? Oh my God!
Well, I think they know, don't they? I mean, bosses know that this sort of thing goes on. It's just part of the game, you know. But I mean, I've always said I'm exactly the kind of worker that the Daily Mail is talking about. but I kind of deeply resent all workers being tarred with my particular brush. I mean, there are lots and lots of workers who really do try and do a good day's work. And one of the biggest frustrations that workers have in the workplace, I think, is not being allowed to do a good job because management gets in the way more than it facilitates, especially if it's not very good management. You know, so having talked about all the ways that I've skived in the past, I've not mentioned any of the ways that I tried to do a good job. And quite often I did try and do a good job, but was prevented from doing so by a set of archaic rules that got in the way, and that sort of company inertia had failed to do anything about. So in one job, for example, the one where we were playing golf a lot was whenever a new service user was inducted, they had to physically fill in 11 different forms, usually nearly all of them with the same information, name, address, date of birth, all these kind of things. They had to write these things with a pen over and over 11 times. So I devised a sort of, you know, database type thing where you only had to put all the data in, the information in once, and it would merge print all this data out to 11 different forms. Now, it saved a ton of time for the staff and even more time for the service users. So everybody sort of used this, and it was great. And when the company found out that I'd done this, they cited data protection laws and threatened to prosecute me, or threatened to have me up at head office on the carpet for gross misconduct. I mean, it was absolutely outrageous. They hadn't provided any computer systems, even though all the other centres had computer systems. We didn't have one because they hadn't given us one, and they expected the staff there to do it all by hand. So, you know, that's just an example. There you are, you know, you try and do the right thing and you just get shat on for it. So, you know, more reason why workers have a bad attitude to work, you know, because it's bullshit. Well, I sense that we're all fairly much in agreement on all this subject. I mean, like I say, it wasn't a very controversial thing that I was saying in the first place. I'm just thinking, unless anybody else has got anything to say, it's 9 o'clock, so we could, you know, just maybe skive off early. What do you think?
Yes, thank you, Paddy. That was an interesting chat. And I'll hear you next week. Bye now.